When people decide to donate to charitable causes around the holidays, it can be hard to balance the impact that gift really has against the feeling people get when giving it. And it can be easy to be lured in by promises of gift programs where a little goes a long way. Our next guest has some perspectives to share on these topics of charitable giving. Dr. Dipesh Navsaria is an associate professor of pediatrics at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. He works in primary care pediatrics, early literacy, medical education, and advocacy. And he recently wrote a column on giving for the Cap Times, looking the gift horse of help in the mouth. Dr. Navsaria, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. Always a pleasure to be here.
First, let's talk about some of these less expensive but nice-sounding programs for giving back. They can be very appealing for a lot of reasons. What are some examples that you've come across?
So some are things like these text messaging programs that send advice, or baby boxes, or programs that give away books, but all they do is give away books, you know, and not more than that. They're very appealing because they're inexpensive. They sound kind of neat. And I think on a very surface level, people think, well, if we just gave people information, or if we just gave their baby a safe place to sleep, then we could fix some of these really big problems in our society, like infant mortality and things like that. But ultimately, they don't make as much of a dent as we'd like to think.
What is it about those types of kind of quick, easy, cheap fixes that just don't go far enough?
They often don't look at the root causes of the issues that are out there. So as a professor, Ariel Khalil at University of Chicago said, she does public policy work, she said, you're not going to text a family out of homelessness. You know, if a family says, gee, thank you for, you know, talking to me about reading to my child or singing to my child, well, if they're not home because they're working their second job because they don't make a living wage, well, we need to fix the living wage issue and not simply just be throwing advice at them and make them feel like, great, I'm failing my child as well as trying my hardest.
You also in your article pointed out a more insidious level of that, I think, that if these easy fixes were really effective, what does that say about the people who are in the situations of homelessness or poverty?
Yeah, I think that it almost sends a message that, oh, you don't know this, or you don't realize this, or if you really want to get down to, you know, are you too lazy to actually follow what we're telling you here? That's really not the case in all the families and other folks that I've worked with. They understand this. This is that there's often these large systemic barriers that keep them from being able to carry out what they want to do, what they know how to do, or what they just need a little hand in knowing how to do well and feel confident doing.
You also write about something called the poverty zoo phenomenon. Can you explain what that is, first of all?
You know, I think there's a lot of folks who feel that by, you know, understanding what's going on with folks who are not as well off as they are, it can help them, you know, gain an understanding of the bigger world around them and so on. There's nothing wrong with that to a certain extent, but I'll also say that how does it feel to people to be looked at, right? To have someone come in from a different socioeconomic class and say, oh, gee, we're here to see poor people and what their life is like and so on. It's almost like a zoo experience in a sense. And, you know, people don't come to homeless shelters or soup kitchens or food pantries essentially consenting to kind of be gawked at in a sense. And I think we need to recognize that while I think we hopefully are providing help and assistance, we also need to make sure we're not doing that at the cost of other people's dignity.
In a previous job quite a while ago, I was involved with taking groups of people to a Latin American country on delegations. And this was a point that we really stressed with them. And it was sometimes difficult to convince people that taking a picture of a mother and her children who were obviously in extreme poverty, that maintaining that person's dignity was more important than what they saw as their job of like bringing this back to the people back home. And it was a delicate balance to try to redirect what I think were at the heart of it, pretty good intentions.
Yeah, I worked with a group some time ago that, you know, we went to a soup kitchen, you know, and served meals to homeless individuals. And, you know, it was all done with the best of intentions, right? We should, you know, serve and give back and all that. But there was no discussion before or after, until I instigated it, of saying, why are people homeless? What are the root causes of this? And what can we do to enact systemic change to move towards a world where people don't have to be homeless and don't have to rely on soup kitchens and volunteers and donations and things like that? And if those conversations aren't happening, and if people aren't actually following through with that, then we kind of continue this cycle of doing little bits of help that might make us feel like others are being taken care of, and we're not actually changing the larger picture of the world that's out there.
We're talking with Dr. Dipesh Navsaria right now. He's an associate professor of pediatrics at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. And we're talking about a recent article that he wrote for the Cap Times called Looking the Gift Horse of Help in the Mouth. And that's an interesting aspect that you just brought up, Dr. Navsaria, that I think in a lot of people would say they are giving because they want to help other people. But I think it's an important step to think about why we are giving in the way that we are giving, and whether that's more about ourselves or the people that we want to help.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people will say that giving and helping others makes them feel good. And I think that's a great thing. I mean, altruism is something we should be supporting at all levels, whether it's your time or money or things like that. I think I'd encourage people to go beyond that level, though, and say, it's not just, I shouldn't just stop at saying, gee, I wrapped some gifts for a family and they're, okay, why does this family need this level of help? And what led that situation to happen? And how can we help make it so that they someday can help others out of that situation and so on? Otherwise, we give small amounts of help and it's only just enough to get by, but it's not enough for people to actually really lift themselves out.
So how can we be better givers? How can we make sure that we are doing charity, whether it's volunteering or giving things? How can we be more respectful and mindful in our giving?
So I think it's one thing to give to groups, whether it's your time or your money, that are dealing with immediate needs, right? Like shelter and food and so on. But then also asking who's out there looking at longer term needs, at education, at, you know, more durable, stable housing, at, you know, job training, et cetera. And then the other thing is also using your advocacy voice to say, why is it that we have a society where children are going without books? Why is it that we have a society where not everyone has access to affordable housing? And asking our elected officials to think about that, and to do that in terms of legislation, as well as also thinking about budgets. Budgets are moral documents. They should reflect our values as a society.
I think it can be difficult for people who are working on the front lines, if you will, with people who are facing a variety of crises, to not want to alienate their donors, their volunteers. But I think there can be some education done, and maybe we can all do that. So if someone is talking about wanting to, for instance, volunteer at a soup kitchen, there are great ways to do it, including maybe not just serving, but sitting down and actually talking with the people so they feel seen. Are those things that any of us can do in talking with others?
I think as long as we're careful about it, I would hate for someone who's at a homeless shelter to feel like because the shelter director asked them to talk to some volunteers that they were obligated to, like as a condition. But if they're willing to tell some part of their story and to help, you know, enlighten folks, I think there are people who are very good at that. Mm-hmm. And I think at raising that consciousness out there. And then I think we need to have an actionable next step, mm-hmm, for people. You know, what can I do to actually change the situation? I once ran a student-run free clinic when I was in medical school, and I told a commission on health insurance in the state, this is in Illinois, I said, you know, whatever you folks come up with, I would love it if you put our free clinic out of business. Mm-hmm. Right? I don't want us to have to exist.
And to be clear, I was thinking more of sharing a meal with someone instead of asking them to kind of present themselves as a case study.
Yeah.
Dr. Navsaria, thank you so much for joining us and for giving us something to think about.
Always a pleasure to be here.
That's Dr. Dipesh Navsaria. He's an associate professor of pediatrics at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. We talked with him today about becoming better charitable givers, the topic of a column he recently wrote for the Cap Times called Looking the Gift Horse of Help in the Mouth.